deacon selection process. And as of this morning, we're appointing three new deacons. There were no objections turned in to the three men that were put forth by you, the congregation. These are men that you selected. Gary Gibbs and David Gibson and Evan Lancaster being appointed this morning as three additional deacons in addition to Kevin and Gibbs and Doug Purdom, making a total of five deacons. We congratulate them on their appointment to a job and a work. It is a work. As 1 Timothy 3 says, it's not an honorary office, but it's an appointment to a work. And the elders are meeting this afternoon to decide all of their jobs and work, and we're going to put them busy, put them to work and get them busy soon because there's much to be done. So we appreciate their willingness to serve, and we appreciate the cooperation of the congregation. As Drew prayed, we have had a peaceful selection process back in the fall a year ago in selecting new elders, and the same thing true with deacons. Often in churches, when you select men to serve in those roles, you have conflicts and you have controversy. But this went smoothly and peacefully, and we appreciate the work that everyone, but especially these men and their wives, we appreciate their work. Open your Bibles with me to 1 Corinthians, if you will, and let's start at chapter 7 as a beginning point, and we'll work our way through quickly to another point in Corinthians, and that'll be the basis of our study. The church at Corinth sent some questions to Paul. Evidence of that is in chapter 7 and in verse 1. He's now ready to turn to a new thought, and he said, "Now concerning the things of which you wrote to me." We don't have that letter. We don't have all of those questions, but we have a general idea of what those questions were. And he said, "Now I'm going to address the things that you wrote to me about." Apparently there were questions that they had asked. Starting here in chapter 7 and verse 1, there were questions about marriage. They must have written to him questions about, is it lawful to marry? What about a person who is married to a non-Christian? Is that scriptural? Should they stay in that? And then there was questions specifically about virgins marrying, according to verse 25. "Now concerning virgins," he said at verse 25, "I have no commandment." And so he addresses that question. Let's go a little bit later, chapter 8 and verse 1. "Now concerning," as he uses that expression, "now concerning," he's addressing those questions that had been addressed to him. And so he now says at verse 1, "Now concerning the things offered to idols." Verse 4, "Now concerning eating of things offered to idols." He addresses the question of eating of meat sacrificed unto idols. Chapter 12, "Now concerning spiritual gifts." There were questions about spiritual gifts. What were they? How were they to be used? How long would they last? He addresses all of those questions. But let's go even further. Chapter 16 in verse 1. This is where we want to look in our study today. In chapter 16 in verse 1, notice as he gets to the end of the book, he's still addressing these questions that have been addressed. And he said, "Now concerning the collection for the saints." So there was a question about the collection or a question about giving. And so in 1 Corinthians 16 verses 1 and 2, he said, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God has prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come." And so he addresses the questions about giving. They had questions about giving. What were they? Well, there must have been something about the command. There must have been something about the purpose for it. There must have been something about when it was to be taken, how it was to be done, the manner in which it was to be done, and how much they were to give. Because he addresses all of those questions here and in the second letter as well. So I want to talk about some questions about giving. Talking about money and talking about giving is not a comfortable subject for the hearer or the presenter. No one likes to talk much about their money. Nor does one much like to hear talk about their money. It's a private matter generally. But the Bible does address the question of giving. Paul had answered some of those questions, and we want to address some of those questions. There's some of the questions that we're going to address today have been presented to the elders, and we want to address those questions as they have been asked to us about addressing those questions concerning giving. And so here's some of the questions that we're going to pursue, and then there'll be some specifics under these. What is the purpose of giving? What is the purpose in giving? Why do we give on the first day of the week? Secondly, when and how often should we give? Should we give at any time, or is there a particular day in which we're to give? And then how often is that giving? Is it once a month, once a year? When do we give? How often should we give? Thirdly, we'll answer the question of how should we give, the manner in which we should give. And fourth, how much should one give? How do I determine that? How do I know if I'm giving as I should? Is it just a token of a contribution, as you might give to someone who's asking for money, and you just give them a one or a five or a ten, whatever you have in your pocket? And how serious is this matter of giving? Is it really a serious, is it a salvation issue? Does it affect my salvation and my relationship to God? Is this a serious issue? Those questions we seek to answer. Let's start with this. Let's talk about the purpose of giving. What is its purpose? Well, let's consider the fact, as we talk about the purpose of giving is not because God stands in need. It is not because God has a need that I need to give to the Lord, because God needs me to give. And God needs what I have. In fact, in Acts 17 and in verse 25, the Apostle Paul said, he is not worshipped with men's hands as though he needeth anything. It's not like God needs anything from us. We don't even worship God. Forget about the giving. We don't worship him because he needs us to worship him. We need to worship the Lord. And so it's not that the Lord stands in need. In fact, in the Psalm 24 and verse 1, that the earth is the Lord's in all of its fullness. Anything you give back to the Lord already owned that in the first place. There is a sense in which we're giving to the Lord when we give on the first day of the week, but that it belonged to the Lord to start with. Furthermore, in Psalm 15 and verse 10, every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle on a thousand hills. And that is in the Old Testament. But if you were to take some of your cattle and offer it as a sacrifice, well, he already owned those cattle. On a thousand hills, he owned those cattle. And so you're not giving the Lord anything that he doesn't already own. That's not the purpose, obviously. We give on the first day of the week so the local church can function. Now let's talk about the church has work to do. What work does the church have to do? Well, we'll quickly notice the fact it has the work of evangelism. That it is the pillar and the ground of truth, 1 Timothy 3:15. Well, that passage simply means that the church disseminates the gospel. It didn't originate, the gospel didn't originate with the church, but the church has the function of disseminating and distributing the gospel in the sense of preaching the word. So it has the work of evangelism. We'll say more about that in just a moment. It has the work of edification, of building itself up. It may edify itself in love, Ephesians 4 and in verse 16. And it has the work of benevolence, of taking care of its own needy, that it, that is the church, may relieve those who are widows indeed. And so those are three works the church has to do. Now the churches in the New Testament had resources. That is, they had money to use and to spend to accomplish that work. How do I know? Well, they sent money. One church would send money out for the preaching of the teaching of the gospel. Paul said he robbed other churches, taking wages of them, 2 Corinthians 11 and in verse 8. So here was a church, or churches, plural, that had funds, they had resources from which to function. They got that money somewhere. We'll talk about where they got that in a moment. But here's another passage. In Philippians 4, 15 and 16, Paul talked about how that no church communicated with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. That is, they had sent once and again unto Paul's necessity. So here's the church at Philippi had resources. Somewhere they got money to function in the work of evangelism, in the work of edification, and in the work of benevolence. Furthermore, the church had a treasury. In 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, we'll come back to this. I'm reading from the New King James Translation. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given orders to the churches of Galatia, so also you must do. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up. That expression, storing, comes from a word from which we get the idea of treasury or a treasure. It has to do with a treasury. So the local churches had treasuries from which to function. And we see that in 1 Corinthians 16. We'll get more evidence of that here in just a moment under another question. So here's the point I want you to see. It takes money to operate for evangelism, edification, and benevolence. And we haven't even cited the passages that deal with one church sending money to another church for the case of benevolence, like in Acts chapter 11, like in 2 Corinthians 8, like in 2 Corinthians 9, and like in our text in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. And all that argues for the fact that the churches had resources. And so what is our purpose for giving? One of the purposes for giving is so the local church can function in evangelism, edification, and in benevolence. But here's another purpose. Why do we give? And why do we take out of our pockets and we put money into the treasury or into the collection plate? Why do we do that? We're showing our love and our appreciation to God for the sacrifice of His Son. Remember, he gave his only begotten son, John 3:16. For all the material blessings that he has given us, every good and perfect gift comes from the Father of lights, James 1 and verse 17. All spiritual blessings are in Christ. You think of the privilege of prayer, the revelation of his will, brethren from whom we gain strength and encouragement, the mediator that pleads our cause. You think of all the spiritual blessings we have, all the material blessings we have, and the sacrifice of his son. But I want to pay particular attention to 2 Corinthians 9. As you're turning there, let's pause just for a moment to make this point. That as we talk about 1 Corinthians chapter 16, that there are parallel accounts that are talking about the same identical circumstance. Not one similar, but the same identical circumstance. And here are the parallel text. Romans 15, 1 Corinthians 16, 2 Corinthians 8, and 2 Corinthians 9. Those four chapters are talking about the same identical collection for the poor saints at Jerusalem. So when we're talking about the contribution of 1 Corinthians 16, we're talking about the same contribution that 2 Corinthians 9 is about. The same event, the same circumstance, helping the same people. So in 2 Corinthians 9 and 13, speaking of that same collection for the poor saints in Jerusalem, I want you to notice that it shows our subjection to God. We'll say more about that in a moment, but suffice it now to say that in verse 13, while through the proof of this ministry, that is this collection for the poor saints, they glorify God for your obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ. There is something about their collecting of these funds and giving it into the treasury, into the contribution on the first day of the week, that signified that they were faithful to their confession of their faith. It showed that they were being submissive and subjecting unto God himself. So it shows our submission and our subjection unto God. But furthermore, God is glorified. Let's back up to verse 12. God is glorified in this. When they took up the collection for the poor saints, they took money out of the treasury and they helped the poor saints. God was glorified in that. Notice beginning at verse 12. For the administration of this service not only supplies the need of the saints, but also abounds through many thanksgiving to God, while through the proof of this ministry, they glorify God for your obedience. God's glorified in doing that. So it's not just a matter that we need money, so I'm going to give because we need money, but God is glorified in the giving and in the spending of the money in a proper fashion. But here's another reason we contribute. I contribute into the treasury that I might have fellowship with brethren. That's important, having fellowship. Let's go to Acts chapter 2 and in verse 42. It is often thought, and I think and I agree, that in Acts chapter 2 and verse 42, these are acts of worship that are mentioned. By the way, Acts 2 is on the first day of the week because Pentecost always fell on the first day of the week. You numbered seven Sabbaths and had one making 50 days. The feast of 50 days would put it on the first day of the week. But verse 42 said they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship in the breaking of bread and in prayers. Well, breaking of bread obviously refers to the Lord's Supper. But here is the term fellowship. It is the same word that is used in 2 Corinthians 8. Now remember our parallel passages, 2 Corinthians 8, 2 Corinthians 9, Romans 15, and 1 Corinthians 16. This is talking about that collection for the poor saints at Jerusalem. And I want you to notice in verse 4, that same word fellowship, when it's referring to giving and the use of money, it's called fellowship. Look at verse 4, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and fellowship of the ministering of the saints. So that was called fellowship. By the way, Philippians chapter 1, let's go to Philippians just for a moment. In Philippians 1 and in verse 5, when the church at Philippi sent and supported the preaching of the gospel in the case of Paul, that was called fellowship. Philippians 1 and verse 5, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day unto now. What are you talking about? Let's go over to chapter 4, verse 15 and 16. He said, you Philippians know that at the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared, there's our word for fellowship, koinonia, with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. So what is it? What are we seeing? What we're seeing is that when a church takes money and supports a preacher of the gospel, that is having fellowship. So these men that we help, whether it be in South Africa, or whether it be in India, or whether it be here in the States, when we're sending money for the preaching of the gospel in those areas of the country, we're having fellowship with them. So when you contribute into the treasury, you're having fellowship with those men. We're having fellowship when we help someone in need out of the church treasury. Whatever we're doing is a matter of fellowship according to these passages. But here's something else. We give into the treasury to obey a command. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. There are those who argue first that the matter of the contribution is not a command of God. We're commanded to sing. We're commanded to pray. We're commanded to observe the Lord's Supper, but we're not commanded to give, we're told. And you don't have to give. You're not commanded to give. It's not a command of God. It's something you should willfully and freely do, but it's not a command of God. Let's see if that's the case. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 16, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order, New King James says orders, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia. Let's stop there. Look up the word order and the word that's translated order, and you'll see that it simply means a command. Here is a direction. Here is an instruction from God. I have given orders to the churches of Galatia. I ordered them. I commanded them to do that by the direction of God. And then notice what he said, even so do ye. Now that's a command for them. Twice in the verse, it was a command to them, and so now I'm commanding you. To do what? Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God has prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. And so why do we give on the first day of the week? Well, there's several reasons. It's not because God needs that. It's not because that somehow God needs something from me, but it's a matter of obeying the commands of the Lord and that we might have fellowship one with another. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 9 and in verse 7. I want you to notice that even though it is a command, now why do I give? I give because the local church can function. Show my love and appreciation for God, have fellowship, but I'm obeying a command. And quite often someone says, you know what? A thing can't be a command and at the same time be willful. Well, are you not commanded to love your wife? And do you not willfully love your wife or love your husband? And doesn't the Bible command us to love our children? Titus 2. Do you willfully love your children? Can you not have harmony between something that is a command and something you cheerfully and willfully do? And what I'm seeing in 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 7, even though it's a command, it can be viewed as a thrilling blessing that I'm able to give. Look at verse 7. We'll come back to verse 6 a little bit later. Let each one give as he is purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity. God loves a cheerful giver. That was talking about the same identical contribution. Commanded in 1 Corinthians 16, but said here, it's not to be of necessity. In other words, don't give it just because it is a command. But it needs to be given from a cheerful heart. More about that in just a moment. Here's the second question. When and how often should we give? When and how often should we give? I want to suggest to you there's all kinds of abuse with reference to the timing of giving. There are many churches that practice that at any time. Meaning, they may, if they decide they want to take up a collection during their so-called revival, on a Monday night, they pass the collection plate on Monday night. If it happens to be on a Saturday night, they'll pass it on Saturday night. Or they may have a fundraiser somehow, and so people are giving money, and they're asking money, and donations are coming in all through the week. So there's all kinds of abuse. There's some that give only when there's a need, and when the need arises, it doesn't matter what day it is, doesn't matter what the circumstance, there's a need we have, and so we ask for contributions. We'll take up the contribution on Tuesday afternoon. That'll be fine. Just take it up on Tuesday afternoon. Often on weekdays, some churches have resorted to billing. They used to call that dunning them. They would dun their members, meaning they would bill their members. They ask for a pledge. Here's how much you're willing to give for a year. And if that's not enough, then they have a need for so many thousand more, and then they divide that among the members, and then you get billed for that. And you get an extra bill that you're to pay on top of your pledge and your free will offering. And that's how they raise their money. Well, let's see what the Bible says about when and how often. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 again. It is limited to the first day of the week because that's the only day that's mentioned in connection with the contribution. There's not another day mentioned. It's the only day that's authorized. Let's look at our text. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God has prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. Now you take all the New Testament references concerning the contribution and the giving, whether it be Acts 2, Acts 4, Acts 6, Acts 11, Romans 15, 1 Timothy 5, 1 Corinthians 16, 2 Corinthians 8, 2 Corinthians 9. I may have missed one somewhere, but you take all of those. And when you get through, you won't find another day mentioned at all. The only other inference to that would be in Acts chapter 2, which was on the first day of the week. We know that. That's the only day that was authorized. And if we respect the silence of God, when God is silent, we are not at liberty to go beyond God's silence. And so that's the only day that's authorized. Just like on singing, that's the only thing that's authorized. There's nothing mentioned about instrumental music. The only thing that's authorized is singing. The only day that's authorized is the first day of the week. But let's consider this question. And we want to give a little attention to this question. Is that to be every first day of the week? And the answer is 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 tells us it's to be every first day of the week. Let's address this contention that's often made, and you can read this scattered all across the internet from brethren and to denominations as well. And it is argued that there's not a need to take up a collection every week, but only when there is a special need. And such is the case, we are told, with 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Now get the point, get what the contention is. The argument is we don't need to take up a contribution. In other words, if we have some money in the bank and we say, you know what, we can function for a few weeks with what we have, then we could say, well, this week we're not taking up a contribution. In fact, we don't need to take up one next week, and we'll wait to when there is a need, and when there is a need, then we'll announce we need to take up a contribution. So in the meantime, what you're to be doing is storing up at home, and then you give when we decide we want to take up a contribution. We'll come to that in a moment. But the argument is that this is what 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2 is about. And that is, you don't take up a collection every week. We're not told to take up one every week, just when there is a need, and that was the case in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Well, we'll acknowledge that this was a special need. That was the case in Corinth. There was a need for the poor saints at Jerusalem, and that's what chapter 15 of Romans, 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 is talking about. But if the argument means anything, if that's so, then there is no pattern for raising money for evangelism. This was only a special need in the case of benevolence, then there is no pattern for raising money for evangelism. Where is the passage that tells me how to raise money for evangelism? There is none, if this doesn't fit. And consequently, then we could raise money anyway for evangelism, any way we want to. We could take up a collection on Monday night or Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, or however we wanted to, but got to have funds for evangelism. We know that. Let's go a little bit further. What this argument fails to recognize and distinguish is there is a difference between general authority for raising money, which 1 Corinthians 16 does, and a particular use of those funds, as in the Corinthian case, as this passage shows. It is contended that, and that's what this argument is saying, that there is no regular contribution before 1 Corinthians 16, and there is not one now. If there was no regular contribution weekly, before 1 Corinthians chapter 16, was there regularly weekly times of worship before 1 Corinthians 16? And by the way, 1 Corinthians 16, those events happened before the events of Acts 20 and verse 7. 1 Corinthians was written about Acts 19. This is later in Acts 20 and verse 7. There's evidence of systematic giving. How do I know? Well, they were giving on the first day of the week in Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. We know that. They were giving again in Acts chapter 4. They were giving again in Acts chapter 6. There was churches having funds and sending those funds out in Acts chapter 11 before we ever get to 1 Corinthians 16. And the questions that were raised in 1 Corinthians 16 shows they knew something about contributions. Now concerning the collection for the saints, they knew something about the collection for the saints. That's why they wrote to him about that. That's why they had questions about that. Now does that mean, if this argument means anything, does that mean that churches that take up a weekly contribution as we do are acting without authority and doing wrong? And someone wants to argue that, you know, there is no passage that tells us to take up a collection every week. Then when we do that and we say that we're doing that, are we doing wrong and are we sinning because we take up a collection every week? But let's go back to 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. I want you to see that the text actually says every week. Look at the English Standard Version. Some of you are using the English Standard Version. It's a good translation. Not all translations are good. The English Standard is a good, reliable translation, as is the King James, New King James, American Standard, and some others. But the English Standard says, upon the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. Now, there's a reason they did that. Let's look at another translation. The New American Standard, several of you are using the New American. It says, on the first day of every week, each of you is to set something aside and save that he, as he may prosper. The New International, which is a free and eclectic kind of translation, but nonetheless, they got it right here. On the first day of every week, each of you should set something aside, aside a sum of money, in keeping with your income, etc. Let's go one more time. Young's Literal, which is much like the American Standard. It's a wooden kind of translation, not literally wooden, but in textual criticism, it's called wooden when it's a literal translation. On every first day of the week, let each of you lay by him treasuring up, etc. Now, why did they do that? There is this word kata in the text. It is found in both the minority and the majority text. There's where your translation, Philip in reading said there was a translation issue. That's a translation, that's a problem between the minority and majority text. That's why your text read a little bit different. It's a difference in the two texts. But both texts contain this word kata. What does kata suggest? Well, Thistleton said that kata occurs in its distributive sense to denote every. That is, it describes week. Kata means it's distributive, meaning it distributes to every week. Well, let's hear from Vincent. Vincent, you hear quoted many times. He's a lexicographer. Vincent says kata has a distributive force every first day. Linsky said the first day of the week is Sunday, and kata is distributive so that we may translate Sunday by Sunday, let each of you lay by, etc. But then the translators of these texts, like King James and New King James, understood that. Even though they didn't put the word every there, they understood that upon the first day of the week meant every first day of the week, just like Acts 20 and verse 7 means every time the first day rolls around. They understood that. But it's in the text, and it means every. Now, another contention that's often made with reference to the contribution is to lay by in store, 1 Corinthians 16 in verse 2, or storing up, the New King James says. The contention is often made that to lay by in store means to put money aside at home to gather it later when a special needs arise. And that's what Paul was saying here, we're told. That what you're to do is that you're to store some money up at home, and so you have some extra money, you store that up and you put that to aside, and then you put some aside later, and you put some aside later, and you put some aside later, and it may be months, it may be another year, when then the elders say, well, we need a collection because we have a need, then you have money to give. You might have a considerable sum of money to give, and then we'll have another need down the line. And so they think that's the idea. I want to suggest to you, there's not a major translation that puts it home in the text. There's not a major translation. I'm not saying there's not one. I can find a translation that has instrumental music in it, and the Amplified Version puts sing and play in Ephesians 5:19, but it's not in the text. It's not in the original. So you may find one, but there's not a major translation that puts that home. Some commentators do, but not a translation. Now listen to this carefully. If funds were saved at home, why was the first day specified? Why would that be specified? Could I not save some money on Monday? If I got paid on Friday, do I have to wait to Sunday to put that aside? I couldn't put that aside till Sunday. If this was to store up at home and then you give it later, why was the first day specified? So you couldn't put some money aside on Monday and say, I'm going to give that to the Lord. You couldn't put it aside. You couldn't put it in a drawer. You couldn't set it aside. You couldn't designate it. Couldn't earmark it until the Lord's day. Why was the first day specified? Furthermore, if they were to be set aside at home, there would be gatherings when Paul came, wouldn't there? He said you were to put, that is, let's go back to our text, 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. Upon the first day of the week, let each of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. If you're storing up at home, there will be collections when he comes, because you still have it at home. There is going to be a collection when he comes. Let's talk about this word storing, 1 Corinthians 16 and in verse 2. On the first day of the week, let each of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, or lay by in store, King James. It comes from this word that simply means treasury, a storehouse, a treasure. You're to lay aside into the treasury from which the church functioned and which they did according to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Let's go to another question now. Talk about how or the manner in which one should give. How should one give? What's the manner? What does the Bible say about the manner in which we should give? Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Remember, that's this parallel text talking about the same thing. Talking about 2 Corinthians chapter 8 in verse 5. We're going to see some characteristics found in 2 Corinthians and 1 Corinthians about how the manner in which one's to give. But this is the key. Verse 5 said, those who gave, those of Macedonia, those of Achaia who gave, how did they give? They first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. We're going to see they gave liberally and they gave out of their poverty and they gave freely and they gave sacrificially. We'll list all of those here in a moment. But how could they do that? They did that because they first gave themselves to the Lord. If you're having trouble giving and you're not giving as you should, the problem is we're not giving ourselves to the Lord. That's the point. So how should we give? You first give yourselves to the Lord. Now here's some biblical principles that come to play. When I'm first giving myself to the Lord, I'm going to give as I have been prospered, according to my income, how much I have. Obviously, one who makes $1 million a year and one who makes $10,000 a year are not prospered the same. And so one would give more than another. But I'm to give in accordance with what I have and how I've been prospered, how I've been blessed. Not just my income, but by how I've been blessed. More about that in a moment. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and in verse 6. Remember, chapters 8 and 9 talk about the same event. These people gave bountifully and liberally, he said. He that sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He that sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. We are to give bountifully or liberally, not just a token. You know, you see somebody taking up money out in front of Walmart or the grocery store, and you say, well, I'd like to help them out. What have I got here? And here's a dollar. I mean, that's my token of my contribution. That's not how we're to give to the cause of the Lord. We're to give liberally, the text says. They gave bountifully and liberally. What else is said? Look at verse 7. As they've purposed in their heart, let each one give as he purposes in his heart. What does it mean to purpose in his heart? It means a plan thing. You thought it out. You take an assessment of what you have and how you've been blessed and what your income is and what your obligations are, and here's how much I can give. That's not a last-minute thing, and let me see if I can find my wallet, and let's see what I've got on me, and let me look in my purse. Here's some money I can give this much. It's not planned. That's not thought out. You've thought it out. You've looked at your budget. You've looked at what you have, and you've purposed in your heart. Look at verse 7. It's a cheerful giving. The manner in which I'm to give cheerfully, not grudgingly or of necessity. That is, if I give, it doesn't matter if it's a dollar I'm giving, and I'm giving that dollar, but I wished I could keep that, and I wished I could hold it back, because that's $52 a year. That's grudgingly. Give cheerfully. And furthermore, let's go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. They gave sacrificially. I mean, it was a sacrifice. It wasn't just, here is a surplus that I have. I don't need this anyway, and I'd probably waste this money, so I'm going to give that to the Lord. But it was a sacrificial giving. Let's begin at verse 2 or verse 3. I bear witness according to their ability. Yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing. What do you mean? Imploring us with much urgency that we'd receive the gift in the fellowship of the ministering of the saints. That is, they gave out of their own poverty. Look at verse 2. For in a great trial of affliction and abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. They gave liberally out of their poverty. I'll tell you, when it comes to giving, forget about the contribution, but maybe there's some need that someone has, and so people start giving, and here's one he'll give $10, and here's somebody else will give $20. And you think, well, they've got 20 and they could give more than that. But that was generous for them to give. But here comes somebody you know that doesn't have any extra money at all, and they give $50. And you think, they don't have that to spare. They need that to eat on. That's sacrificial. Our giving is to be sacrificial. That's the manner in which we are to give. Now, how do we answer this question, how much should one give? In the Old Testament, there was the principle of tithing, which was 10%, but if you go back and assess what the Jews gave, it was far more than 10%. They were to tithe this and to tithe that without going through those details. It came to much more than just 10% of their overall wealth, whatever they had. It was much more than that. But tithing is not mentioned in the New Testament, so we have other principles to follow upon. There is no specific amount given. That is, the Bible doesn't say you're to give $20 or $100 or $500 a week. The Bible doesn't give a specific amount, nor does it give a specific percentage. 1 Corinthians 16:2 says we're to give as we have been prospered. So how do you determine that? That's determined by a number of things. Number one, the amount that one makes. How much money do you make? How much income do you have? And how much of that is take-home pay versus you got to send back to the government? Or has that already been taken out? So look at your income. How much money do you make? You're making more now than you did before? Secondly, other blessings, gifts, or inheritance. Here's someone who's at poverty level, but they got an inheritance of $10 million. He said, but I don't have much. I just have $10,000 income a year, and so I don't give much. No, you've prospered quite well. You've been very prosperous. So look at your gifts, your inheritance, whatever else that you may have. Look at your obligations and your responsibilities. Here's someone who's single and they're making $100,000 a year, and here's someone that's making $100,000 and they've got 10 kids to feed. Obviously, one has more obligations than others. What are your obligations and your responsibilities? Here's some examples that ought to help us to know how much we should give. God gave His Son. You're talking about a gift? You talk about a sacrifice? He didn't just give us a token. Here's a little sacrifice. Here's some lamb I'll offer for you. Or here's some person. He gave His only Son. Not one of several, but the only one He had. He gave that for us. His Son gave His own life for us, Romans 5. And not only that, there were others who gave sacrificially. Now, Saturday night in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, but go back to Acts chapter 4. I'm not going to take the time to turn there. If you want to turn there, you can look beginning at verse 32. This was the case where Barnabas and others, they sold lands and houses that they might give. Here was a need. And in order that they may give to help those who were in need, they sold some things to take what they had sold and take those funds and give it to those who were in need. That's sacrificial. That's lands and houses they had. That's sacrificial. Here's the question. The question to be asked is not so much how much do I have to give, but the question should be how much do you want to give or how much can I give? How much can you give to the Lord? How much do you want to give? Is it you have an attitude, I want to give this much, but I can't afford that, but I sure wished I could, and if I could, I'd give that. Have you ever noticed? I've noticed through the years sometimes people say, boy, if I had money, I'm going to give and I'm going to help people and I'm going to give to the church and I'm just going to help and I'm going to do a lot with the money. And then they come into money and you don't see much of that going out. You don't see it in the church treasury and you don't see it going to other people. How much do you want to give? Let's go back to these principles. Are you giving? Remember, these are the principles we noticed about the matter. Are you giving as you've been prospered? I want to suggest to you, I don't think Larry minds me telling you, he's our treasurer, and he looks at the checks he has to for the check purposes, but he doesn't tell any of the other elders nor anybody else what anybody gives, and none of us want to know. And that's a burden to know that sometimes. But if that were to be posted where people see what you give, would that reflect your income? Or would people think, you know what, that's more than I thought they'd give because I know about what they make, or is it much less than in comparison to your income? Does your giving match what your income is? Are you giving as you're prospered? Secondly, are you giving liberally? If that were to be posted and someone were to see that, would that be something that they'd say, man, that's very liberal? Because you add that up 4 or 5 times a month and 52 weeks a year, that's a lot of money. Look what you could buy with that. That's liberal. And are you giving sacrificially, like they did in 2 Corinthians 8? Is your giving sacrificial? How much should one give? Let's close by talking about how serious this is. Is giving a serious matter? Well, is any act of worship a serious matter? How we sing, how we worship in music, how we pray, is that serious? Is it a command of God? If it is, it becomes a serious matter. Let's consider this. The Bible talks about we reap what we sow. Galatians chapter 6 talks about the general principle. That's all we're looking at this point. Then we'll look at a specific application. But Galatians 6 talks about we reap what we sow. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that will he also reap. In other words, you can't fool God. You can't do one thing and then expect to reap something else. That's fooling God. You can't fool God. What you sow, that you'll also reap. For one who sows to the flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. Who that sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap life everlasting. What am I learning from that? You reap what you sow. Well, let's see that principle played out in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning at verse... Actually, I want to back up to verse 6. I should have had verse 6 on the screen. But 2 Corinthians chapter 9 at verse 6. And 2 Corinthians 9 takes that general principle and applies it to the contribution. Applies that to the contribution. Notice what verse 6 says. Forget the screen before. I need to look at verse 6. It's not on the screen. But verse 6 says, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He that sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. We reap what we sow. And here he makes a specific application to our contribution. That is, if my giving is sparing, I'm not sacrificial, I'm not liberal, I'm not giving as I should, then God's going to, I'm going to sow, I'm going to reap based on what I'm sowing. It becomes a serious matter. So how serious is it? It has to do with my salvation. It has a whole lot to do with my relationship to God. Let's consider some examples of those who didn't give as they should. It might not be the contribution on the first day of the week, but they didn't give as they should. And they were not pictured in a pleasant light. For example, the rich young ruler. Remember the rich young ruler? Had a great wealth. And he come to the Lord asking, what good thing shall I do that I might inherit eternal life and will keep the commandments? And I've done all of those. What is there anything else? He thought he almost had it. Well, go sell all you have and give to the poor. And he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Remember the rich man in Luke 16? He would bemoan the fact that a beggar would even eat the crumbs that fell from his table. He's not going to give to anybody. He's not going to give of what he has. He's keeping it for himself. He was not painted in a pleasant light. Remember the rich man in Luke chapter 12? He's going to tear down his barns and build greater ones. And he thought his life consisted of the abundance of the things which he possessed. He was not pictured in a great light. And so when life is over, are you going to be pictured in the day of judgment as you're kind of like the rich young ruler, or you're like the rich man, or you're like the rich fool? Or are you going to be like those in Corinth that gave, or those of Macedonia who gave sacrificially and liberally? One last thing, one last passage, and the lesson is yours. I want us to consider the fact that Malachi 3 and in verse 8 says it's possible to rob God. Stealing is stealing, and stealing is bad no matter who you steal from. You steal from a thief, that's just as bad as it stealing from anybody. But it's unimaginable that you would steal certain things. When I lived in Kentucky, one of our elders owned a religious bookstore, and people came in frequently, and you know what the number one item they stole? Bibles. They stole Bibles more than anything. Bibles. Can you imagine stealing a Bible, of all things? People steal from churches. But the worst of all would be to steal from God himself. Will a man rob God, was the question. And then the prophet raised the question, when have we stole from God? It's in tithes and offerings, he said. When you didn't give as you should, you were stealing from God. And none of us would like to be thought to be a thief, but if I'm supposed to be giving more based on my being prospered or based on the principle of liberality or on the principle of sacrificial giving, and I should be giving more, and I'm not, then I'm stealing that from the Lord. I'm robbing God. And so what have we seen in our study today? Well, we've tried to answer some questions about giving. Paul had some he had to address. The elders have been asked some that we seek to address. And here's some of those questions, and hopefully these answers are helpful to you. What's the purpose of giving? When and how often should we give? How should one give the manner, and how much should I give, and how serious is this? Hopefully those answers will help you as you privately make the determination of here's how much I'm going to give, how much I will give, and here's when I'll give, and I want to be pleasing and acceptable unto God. There may be one or more present this morning who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and sing?